Hello, and welcome to Holden Village. Today is Thursday, August 1st, 2002, and today's session is A Multicultural Church, What Would It Look Like? By Lorraine Brew. It is session number BR-L-2002-01. Let's listen in.
So the tape can begin to roll. My name is Lorraine Brew. I've seen most of you in worship over the past week, serving here as a village musician. At Valparaiso University, I teach organ and church music. And the topic we're going to look at today is the multicultural church and how a local parish, a local congregation, might address issues of becoming more multicultural and finding its place in a more global and multicultural world. And I think particularly because in current most mainline denominational hymnals, which have been revised in the past 25 years, perhaps with the Lutheran Book of Worship kind of starting that revolution of each denomination re-looking at its hymnody, we find today in most of our hymnals an array of both global and multicultural music. Here, take a hymnal as well, please. And so I think most congregations are looking at, what do we do with this music that's in here? And often, I think what happens are one of two extremes, and what I'd like to explore is something that would be in the middle. One is that the musicians in a parish are classically trained and don't know what to do with music from other cultural contexts. And so if that music is used, the musicians simply take it to the organ and play it and hope the people will sing along. And often this is not an effective way to lead music from other cultural contexts. On the other side are those who know that they don't know enough about how to perform, say, an African hymn to do it authentically. And so knowing that they don't have that ability, that hymnody is just avoided. And so I'm going to suggest why we might want to try things that would be down the middle. But let's look at first why a parish would want to incorporate multicultural elements into its worship. And that doesn't have to be necessarily a hymn, but could also be a prayer or a litany, a ritual from another place. Can you suggest some ideas? Or if your parish has done some of this, can you suggest why your parish has decided to introduce things like this?
Yeah. At the very least, it's novel, and it's not the same old, same old. It's not the three B's.
That's right. So it introduces some unique and new thing into our work, you know, maybe kind of to enliven us a bit.
I would hope the reason it is hard to be more aware of other cultures and need our church to offer our church to people of other cultures.
Okay, so to be perhaps welcoming to others, would that say
yeah,
well?
Yeah.
Okay. Good. Good. So that could be an issue of welcome or hospitality. A decision of hospitality. Other reasons we might want to look at these new elements?
In our church, when we've used it, it's helped us to be cognizant of other parts of the world that normally we would just pull by. I mean, when we do the beautiful Spanish pieces or the African pieces or Chinese or Japanese pieces, it's really quite effective in helping people remember that the Christian community is not just in that church or just in that town.
Good, good. So a bridging with people in another place who aren't present in your place, but who are part of the body of Christ. Yes.
We belong to a church that is a combined congregation of Lutheran and Catholic. Has been for 16 years now. We have a Catholic priest and a Lutheran minister who share the service. One will open the service and the other one will preach the sermon one Sunday. The next Sunday, it's all the way around.
Wow. That's wonderful.
And we started out even communing together, but the bishops of both churches said, oh, you can't do that.
Yeah.
We had to stop.
Where's that at?
Portland, Oregon. Called Mission of the Atonement.
Is that the one on Chul Spirit?
Yeah.
Yes. Uh-huh.
Okay.
Yeah, another thing too with our church is that there is, that we're still teaching our children in their own traditions. Uh-huh. But there is about 18 couples who are Lutherans and Catholics who are coming to church and you know, expressing an interest to teach their children in their own faith. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
So that's really been a blessing for our church.
That's wonderful. Yeah.
Part of the reason that it's attractive to me is that so often in the world we associate our culture with our religion. And we assume that because we have a certain kind of song we sing or a certain way that we pray or a certain tradition about the way we practice our faith, that that's our faith.
Uh-huh.
And I think by incorporating different types, we do a lot of different types of prayers from different places and different types of music and that kind of thing. I think it pulls us away from thinking that our tradition is our faith, mm-hmm. or our culture is our faith, because it's not.
That's very important. It's very important so we can see that that can then be expressed differently by a different culture, by different people, and still be a Christian faith.
Kind of along those same lines, I think for reasons like congregation needs to explore this is because for its own survival, because it's affecting the people around the community. We're not going to be Lutherans of Scandinavian or German descent for as long as we continue on in the future.
Mm-hmm. Right, that in some ways the most culturally exclusive pockets of life are often our church life on Sunday mornings, that we gather in more ethnic gatherings there on Sunday morning than most of the rest of our lives represent. I think all of those are good reasons. I'd suggest one more that you kind of came close to in yours, and that is solidarity with others. And maybe that's kind of what you were meaning. Mm-hmm. But that if you want to pray with and for people, for instance, in an oppressed situation, or for people in the Middle East, or people experiencing a certain quality that you want to be in solidarity with, that having something from their culture, it can be, you know, a physical reminder of those people. And I think you kind of hinted at that as well. Was there one more thing that you wanted to add in the back?
One thing, I happen to be Italian by birth, and 90% of people that will look at me and say, well, you're Catholic.
Mm-hmm.
And I say, well, I wasn't raised Catholic, I was raised Lutheran. And I was raised German Lutheran, which makes me a really attractive.
Yes, indeed.
So that is another thing that it's been personally for me to see how people will just put you in a certain slot.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. Because that's already a multicultural situation. In fact, that's one of the points I'm going to make later, that in fact, all of our parishes are already multicultural situations. And we may or may not recognize and celebrate that and make the most of it, but there are certainly multiple cultures among us in any parish. Well, those are all wonderful reasons to develop multicultural elements in your worship. But I'm going to suggest one more, and one then that we'll be exploring now for the rest of this time, because I think there's yet another, and I would suggest an even deeper reason for considering any of these elements into our worship. And that has to do with the idea of the limitation of any one particular local context in its ability to completely express the praises of God. And I think you were kind of alluding to this a little bit. And I think sometimes a picture helps just a little bit to look at it. But that in any local congregation, you have a certain limit and a particular set of gifts and talents, uniquenesses, values,
gifts that arise out of that context. And then, in order to enlarge that, it's often helpful to look at some other cultural context who might have something that they express in a way more complete than your congregation expresses it. And I think if a congregation looks at a new element from that angle, from the angle of, could this element speak in our assembly, in our context, and enlarge our praises of God? In other way, in other words, saying something that we couldn't quite say before, or that we didn't know how to express, that our expression could become richer. The reason I think that's an important consideration in adding it is that then that element, if it's found to be able to express God's word among those people, can have real staying power. Then, for instance, when solidarity with the people of El Salvador is no longer a front issue, the elements that you've brought in perhaps from those people might have found a home among you and might stay even after the issues come and go. Issues of hospitality the same way, that we do want to be hospitable to one another, welcome one another into our assembly, but that issue alone could become, again, not a front burner issue, and then become something that then drifts away with those elements. So the way I like to picture it is that when a local congregation decides that it wants to encounter something else, something from outside of its own borders, it does what I call a border crossing. And this, let's say this is some other cultural context. Let's say at the moment, perhaps a song from El Salvador that the congregation decides it wants to learn, and for the purpose of perhaps initially being in solidarity with those people. There's a place right here that I call the border crossing. And at that position of the border crossing, the local congregation decides to try this element from this other cultural place. Then, if you look at the sheets in front of you, what I want to suggest is in trying out this element and deciding if indeed it has a place in your own assembly, this process will help you to determine whether or not this could have staying power. So first, let's just back up to number one. I'm really talking about number two already. But number one, it's important to define and describe one's own context. To know, for instance, in this German Lutheran parish, that there are members of Italian descent among it. To know what the particular strengths of the congregation are. What do we do well? Do we celebrate well? Do we pray for others well? What is it that we really do well? And to know that, to describe it and know it, we often take it for granted.
By the way, I'm not German Lutheran now. Okay. I'm ELCA or whatever you call it now.
Good. Okay, that's fine. Thank you for clarifying that. And then, number two is to then attempt what I'm going to call the border crossing, is to look at another element from another place and consider bringing it into your home context. And this is where a different culture affects us. Number three, then, after that decision has been made, and this is where it starts to get a little bit interesting and difficult, is to initiate a learning process to find out what one can about what this element is. For instance, how it's used in its home context, what it's used for, who it is that would be leading it in the place from which it came. Perhaps finding out about the culture itself, how is worship celebrated in that culture. And then to introduce that element into worship and to choose a way that honors the cultural context without trying to duplicate it in your own setting. In other words, in a North American parish, it's not going to be possible to sing a song from El Salvador exactly as it would be led and sung in El Salvador, because we're not people of that culture. And so not to be afraid that it's not exactly like that, but through what we can learn, to do what we can, you know, the addition of instruments that are representative of what would be used there, the leaders that could lead in a style similar to that, so that we do what we can to honor that context. Five, then, is to try it more than once. Always takes more than once, and best in more than one kind of setting, not always the same kind of setting. If you have different kinds of worship services, maybe try them in several forms. And then to evaluate, to ask if indeed this thing, whatever it was, a song or a prayer, was able to speak to your context and able to, that people were able to worship and feel God's presence through it. Then if that answer is yes, then perhaps that thing has a staying power in your place. Questions about the process or comments on anybody who's tried some of this?
We've tried some of the American Indian songs and having instruments brought in. Mm-hmm. Also several from, can't think of the other two countries now, but have brought instruments in, and we've also had some people come in and speak from other cultures, not during service, but either after service or having a special night for them to come. And it's been quite well attended.
Is that right? And well received?
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. Seems that they want more. So if they want more, that means it's pretty much you know what they want. And it's a young congregation.
Others?
We don't really go through this process. I mean, we do at least one song from another country, gosh, almost every week. And we have a delay and some different shaking type things and guitar and piano. And we do that fairly regularly. And I think people like it. It's a little more, I think it's because it's more lively than the hymns. And we just mix that. We have usually open and sometimes close a service with those kinds of songs and then those traditional hymns in the middle. And I think people, for the most part, like the liveliness and the color of it.
Do those hymns stay, or do you just rotate them in and out and then they're gone, they're here and then gone, or do they become part of your regular repertoire?
Well, they're a regular repertoire.
Yeah, okay.
Because I'm out of the old tradition of repetitions, I could learn. Uh-huh. And so we did Molding Lord the other day, and that's the second time we've done it, but the words go so fast in that we'll keep doing it. Mm-hmm. You know, we'll keep throwing it in every once in a while, and they'll learn it. But the repertoire of those, I guess, international songs is quite large now. It's kind of neat. And it's does dovetail nicely with the older stuff, you know, because we try to mix it, so it's not all one or the other.
What was interesting to me, though, was that we did a concert at a nursing home a couple of weeks ago, and our choir did. And we did a lot of just old standard hymns and then some anthems, but we did a whole section with some African and Caribbean and Latin American stuff with the drums and everything. And we were a little concerned about how they were going to handle it, and they loved it. I mean, they were dancing in their chairs, you know. So that was a great revelation, too.
And I don't know if this is why, but one thing to consider about Native American, Hispanic, African, most Asian tunes as well, is that they are intended to be taught and learned orally, not through written form. And in most cases, we have them in our hymnals because some transcriber wrote them down for the purpose of transporting them to the Western world. And so, in their intent, they were intended to be learned by hearing. And so I don't know if that's why the elderly people took to them or were able to respond, but in fact they were hearing them more in the context, perhaps, than your parishioners, who were trying to read them off the page. And often off the page, like the hymn you mentioned, is very difficult to look at off the page. But if you hear it in your ear only and then try and remember it, it's actually somewhat easier. So, and that's another issue, you know, in getting the books down and out of our hands and getting where we can interact with one another, too, a real value of a lot of this music.
I wanted to play with, in the hymn book, we're Presbyterian, and in ours we have sections of different cultures. I mean, there's, geez, I don't know, 10 or 15 African-American and 5 or 10 Chinese and Korean, yeah. And I toyed with the idea, I haven't done it yet, but I'm toying with the idea of just using a block of those hymns out of like one culture for like one Sunday, and then tie that in to the, you know, to the liturgy, because that's the service. I think it'd be a lot of fun.
Yeah.
You know, I think it'd work, you know.
And if your people are open to it, that's wonderful.
Yeah, but yeah, they are our place there.
I think the idea of
bringing
it out of the book is a good one.
Yep.
Because our congregation doesn't do too well on unfamiliar hymns.
Well, that's what the, I think that's where we failed often, because they'll throw in a Spanish, Mexican, Latin American thing once, and then you never sing it again.
Exactly.
So, and you've got to sing things multiple times before you can, before you can even comment on whether you like it or not. Really.
Yes, I absolutely agree, and I think we often build in our own failure by not allowing that repetition to happen, because there is that difficulty of the learning curve in the beginning.
But also when you said that the book was structured with different languages or different cultures and sections, that almost seems like it's irregardless of the context in which the song is supposed to be played. That's important, it's more than anything, so we need to make sure we put it in the right context.
Well, there is...
if something praised, we would not be good in the songs.
Thank you for that. They're in the different... The Presbyterian, the New Presbyterian hymnals in four sections. The first is lectionary-based, the second is the Psalter, the old Psalter again, and then the third is the topical, and then the fourth is service music, and the one I'm thinking about is in the topical. Mm-hmm. And it's, they're not just all clumped together, but I mean, they're in the topical under, you know, God, Jesus, Holy Spirit, Church, Mission, and all that stuff.
So they're in the right context.
Yeah. But you're right, they need to be appropriately used.
Yes.
One thing I think with us introducing different songs from different countries is that the last Sunday of the month we do not have a Eucharist. So it's a lay-led service, and we have several people who are very talented in music, and they bring out things that, and we kind of look forward to it. July, but in June, they had an all song service, which brought in a lot of songs, and people were just really, really happy with it. They just thought it was just really great, wanted it again.
Good.
So that's one way that we get some of the songs repeated, by having a lay-led service.
Uh-huh, right. Good. Yeah, it's good to vary that repetition so it doesn't just feel like it's being, push down someone's throat again, but that it's offered in a variety of ways to let people interact with it. And remember, again, the motivation that I'm trying to get us to think about today is, do these words and this music, in the case of music, have the ability to speak to this people, to allow them not to just experience the music just as a novelty, which was kind of where we started, that sometimes we want to introduce something into worship just for the novelty, but to make sure we go way beyond that to make sure that eventually this thing could really speak to this community and enlarge its praises in some way. What I'm going to ask that we do...
I think...
Yes?
I really affirm that, and I think that many times, and I'm sure Lutherans are far better at this than we Presbyterians, but the Worship and Music Committee is laughingly called the War Department. Much of the time, because you're trying to do so many things, you know, within the context. And I guess for me, when I've heard people talk about their experience in congregations where they don't have the diversity, they're trying to fine-tune the comfortable old hymns that are the comfort hymns to us.
Mm-hmm.
they're trying to, they get smaller and smaller and smaller and smaller and smaller, and they can't see the forest for the trees. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's always been painful for me to see that in congregations, that instead of trying to figure out how we should sing How Great Thou Art, you know, let's affirm that that's a beautiful piece, but let's affirm that there's other places, like you say, we can engage, you know, more healthy, perhaps see the world differently. And boy, that takes leadership, and not just the pastor.
Right.
I think it takes people in the pews that can stand up and say, you know, let's not be afraid of this.
And I think it does take teamwork. In fact, this process, I would suggest, can only really happen if there is some teamwork. And I would suggest the best place for it is the Worship Music Committee. Have any of you ever served in a team, whoever it is in your parish, that does some of the worship planning for the community? Yeah. And so I think that would be the best place. Well, it doesn't have to be there. So what I'm going to ask that we do is I'm going to place you at number two, the contact with another cultural context. And I'm going to ask you to pretend that you're in the situation of being on that team of people in your context who are making the decision whether or not to try this particular piece of music. And we're going to have three or four examples, however many we have time. So what I'm going to ask you to do, I'd like you to, if you would like to pick, I've got four different models of parishes to pick from, and I'd like you to pick the model that would be closest, perhaps, to the one that you live in. Although if you'd really like to do a different context just for the fun of it, that would be fine as well. So let me just tell you a little bit about what I suggest these four situations are. Number one would be a small urban parish. And I try to in all of these models, suggest real life kinds of places. Places where, you know, there really are parishes like this. So I'm going to suggest that this congregation is historically white, but the neighborhood around it is becoming African American and some Hispanic. Okay, so those would be the pretend context. If yours is similar but a little bit different, that's fine if you try that group. The second would be a large suburban parish, and this would be located perhaps in a middle management community where there are a few African-American members of the parish as well as some members of the community. The parish is still mostly white. The parish is known for both an active youth and for education ministries, and that clearly is where some of the priorities of the parish are. Three would be a rural parish, which is probably small, that really doesn't matter for the purpose of this exercise. And it's an aging population. Most retired people would be the makeup of the congregation. There are a few young people, though most have moved away to larger cities. And then number four would be a multiracial urban parish, which would have a mixture of cultures among it. Let's say white, African American, Hispanic, and perhaps also some Asian members. Okay, so I want you to pick one of those, either one like your own or one that seems interesting to you, and as long as we get more than one person in each group, then we'll let that be. If we end up with one person in a group, then we'll readjust a little bit. So if the people who would like to try one would go over here, two maybe right from where you are, three here, and four over here. Let's see what we look like.
You want?
Yes.
Are you a two?
I'm a two.
One, I'm a two.
I guess small is small. How small is small?
Is it
very
small? How about you guys?
Only ones and twos. Okay, that's fine.
6,000.
That works. It's small. That's fine.
Do you want us to pick?
No, I will pick him.
You're a teacher, so.
Right, I'm a teacher.
Right.
Okay, turn if you would to gather 411.
Oh, you are. Okay. 411. That's theirs. I don't think that's one she wants us to decide.
Which one are we supposed to do? Are we supposed to do the same hymn?
Yes, we're all doing 411. We're going to sing it. And now remember, the question is not, do you like it? Okay? And the question is not, do you think an African song should be introduced into your worship? The question is, do you think this piece would have the ability to speak in this context? And if so, why do you think yes or no? Okay, I'm going to give you maybe 3 minutes to discuss it, and then I'm just going to take a little tally as we go by each hymn.
Do we discuss it with our fictional place, or are we actually thinking of our real home?
Yeah, if your real home is pretty much like where you are, then you can do it from reality. Because I think that would be the most helpful to you. Okay, we'll sing this in English. This is a hymn from Tanzania, I believe. And it, as you see, it's a blessing. Okay? So, I'll sing you a line, perhaps, and you can sing it back. And I'll do it in English, just to keep things real simple here. May God grant you a blessing.
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 Try out whether it could speak in our context.
So we've already made the decision. We want to try to find hymns to make border crossings.
Yeah, I'm kind of forcing that on you.
I like this one for our particular situation.
Yeah, it's a simple.
We could use a blessing.
Yeah. Would you have a problem introducing
yeah.
this?
Yeah, yeah.
It's
simple. No, we just had a vicar with us.
And I think that's
served here in Tanzania. So she came with them. She's been introducing a lot of.
Yeah, it's got some nice rhythms and it's upbeat, but it's yeah, it's not so far out.
Worshiping on us.
You will go.
So I think
we'd
at least go along with
it. 19 verses.
We have one couple in our church and missionaries in Africa.
Yeah, it might be a close by crossover.
And,
it's not a.
We have a.
This actually is ideal for us because we are in a relationship with Tanzania. These words, Masu, is a real common phrase. And so he has been a lot of folks have been. And then learning some stuff.
So this for my own one thing that this boy did.
This was great. I need to go back and do something with them. This would really be in English as well as it. Because this one is not that difficult either. So I think it's a very phonetic language.
And he says, each of
which is like the Cornell system.
You know, for a young man, just to have that much compassion for this person who that
captures, you know, just the church doesn't really know.
Yeah, we couldn't, hey, this couldn't be done with an organ dirge.
You have to get the choir.
We think of it.
I think it's an choir as a performance, and really a choir is also.
So I think our congregation.
Even if it's not, they should be the ones that know this.
More approach than maybe.
This would be for children's choir.
This one doesn't even need an organ dirge. I almost think it could be done with a choir.
A lot of the songs that we've done. From other cultures.
To sing it out without.
We know.
You don't like organs.
I've only thought of taking a kettlebell to their own.
They certainly just sang it.
The red that came.
Is the organist though also the one that leads the music at all times?
No, but interestingly enough, she's a very skilled person on piano. But you get another organ.
Okay, I'm going to interrupt your conversations because I don't think this hymn was probably really too hard. So let's start with number two, large suburban parish. Would you use it?
Yeah.
Oh, sorry, you're large suburban.
We're large suburban.
Okay, large suburban, would you use it?
We loved it.
You loved it. Okay, so yes, and you want to say a little why? Simple and singable.
It's not too far. It's not too far out. It's a little different, but it's not so different that people would go, "Boo, what's this?"
Which, parenthesis, by the way, is true of many, many African, particularly Tanzanian tunes, is that because the musical system that they often learn was through the Western missionaries, the musical sound, you know, of in this case, four-part harmony, is not too far away from what feels pretty familiar. Mm-hmm. So
it's, Lois said the language, the use of the words was very typical, so it was realistic. You know,
One of the few phrases that I learned right away. Mungu alabariki, God bless you, is something that's a very common dismissal, and when you couldn't say a whole lot else, you could always say Mungu, which is God, alabariki, which is bless you.
And Bwana is Lord, is that what?
Well, Bwana is another form of God.
Another form of God. So Bwana, God, amabariki is bless you.
Yes. We also thought this is a great one for the choir to learn as well first, because they could become the leaders.
Again, finding a different way to present it, too.
Not an organ.
And not an organ, right?
And I think a lot of things fail because with good intentions, the organist says or the choir director says, well, okay, we'll just try it this Sunday, and there is no rehearsal, no lead-in, no practice. And then they say, see, we tried it, and it doesn't work.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Okay, I put up the wrong thing. Well, small urban, what's your answer?
No problem.
Yeah, we're doing it.
Okay. I'll just leave both yeses up. Any different reasons from them? Did you see it any differently because of who you are?
No, I think for us it would just be whether it says it has a message that's consistent with what we're doing. Mm-hmm. We wouldn't have any trouble. The one thing that I mentioned was we've done a lot of the stuff that we learned from Bread for the Journey, and we can listen to it on tape, and so we know at least we have a version of how it's done, and I'm curious about this one, about what rhythm and tempo and background music would be.
Right. So, and sometimes, especially with oral tradition hymns, you kind of have to hear it orally. That if you just learn off the page, you don't know if you have a very convincing presentation.
I think that's a good idea, getting a tape ahead of time and playing it through.
Absolutely, especially with this music that you may not know. Okay, let's try another one. Turn to 400 in Gather. It's a hymn called Lead Me, Guide Me. And this hymn comes out of the African American church. It could be called a gospel style, written by Doris Akers, both the text and the tune. Okay, we'll just sing, let's sing the refrain, and then we'll sing a verse. We'll sing the first verse, "I am weak and I need thy strength." Then we'll sing the refrain again. We won't sing the rest of the hymn because I don't want to take up our time that way. So again, turn your thoughts to not how this hymn impresses you, but think about the words particularly, but also the musical style for your context, and consider whether you would want to cross this border and bring this into your assembly. Make sure that you have the complete sense of the text before you go on.
I like it.
I like it. The only thing that kind of grabs me is the
same.
The
same.
Yeah.
I mean, I think it might be hard to know this one. It's so.
Our moderation, but this
song. Me neither. Do you ethnic songs from other
countries? Yes. But we have a connection with some church,
and some of this
change for this.
And that community is why that's what's going on. It's really important to have the
future.
I think that
we have even used this song in the services.
It's beautiful. I mean, that makes a difference. It does. This kind of thing.
Our pianist is a wonderful person, and she does great with the tunes.
So maybe it'd be more around the scene.
She doesn't have the strength, you know.
We have a good pianist. We also have a good guitar player and a good drummer.
Play it like Chopin.
So,
it wouldn't be Chopin.
No, she. Darlene is a classical pianist. That's what she is. And if it's not that, she doesn't do it.
You have to really feel it from the church.
Yeah.
Right.
OK, okay, I'm going to move you right along. And I know you haven't exhausted this, but let's hear first from the small urban parish. What was your answer?
We would like to use it, but we were a little concerned about having a, especially if we're supposed to be sort of a historically white parish, if we would have somebody with the ability to play it.
Exactly. That I think you were both picking up, both groups were picking up on that. It is a pretty difficult piano part. Mm-hmm. And it is written out in a way that if you don't know gospel style, you can do some justice to it. Although to know the gospel style certainly will make it roll a little better.
And especially if you want to sort of, in the situation you set up for us, that we're in a historically white church, but there's lots of African Americans and Hispanic people moving in, that you don't want to hack their tradition, because that's not going to be inviting to them.
Good point. So the reason, part of the reason for choosing it might be identification with this neighborhood, but then if it isn't presented well in a way that feels inviting, it might, you know, not serve its purpose well. That's a very good point. Yeah.
I had one, or yeah, more than just a couple of token blacks, but one, the one gentleman who tolerates us the most when we sung Lift Every Voice and Sing. He said, I really appreciate your effort for you just singing it too darn fast.
I know. I always want to sing it fast. They like slow.
They like
it.
To
but
sing it slow. They do, yeah.
I think a lot of things, we just don't get it.
Yeah, right. And that's where both, it's hard and we want to respect, you know, the place from which it came. And yet, singing it a bit faster might just be the most appropriate thing in a context that isn't predominantly African American, too. So I think as long as that's a considered decision, and it isn't just done without any understanding. Yeah, good. Okay, does that kind of cover what you talked about? Okay, large suburban, what'd you do?
One of the things we realized was the theology that was being expressed in the hymn would not necessarily fit our setting of where most of our people are at. And then so we felt that we find some way to address that, either through some education or in some thematic form or during the service.
Good point. Because again, you know, if it's done just for a novelty, it's a fun song to sing, right? So, you know, it can be fun as a novelty, but if in fact the theology isn't something that the parish wants to express, then I think then that has to be taken very seriously and considered. Or not used. I mean, the other decision is, as fun as this would be, as much as our people would like it, maybe it's not the most appropriate thing for us to sing.
When in the service are you going to sing this song? Or that's a question. I would ask you, when's the appropriate time? Or what part of the service?
Well, I think when we've used this hymn before, I think we've used it during communion, as a communion distribution hymn, which I think works well. I can't think offhand of any other.
In the African-American setting, quite often they do it right before the sermon.
I was going to say, not so much in ours, but in African American community, I think that sermon.
Is a sermon preparation kind of event. Okay. Anything else on that? All right. Now it's going to get a little bit harder. Turn to 341. What we find less of in our hymnals than African or African American music is music from the continent of Asia. And partly for that reason, but also because now we're talking about quite a different musical system. This music has had a hard time, in many cases, finding a home among congregations. You Lutherans may recognize that this hymn is in With One Voice, and so it's also in Lutheran hymnal. I don't think it's in a whole lot of others. This melody is intended to be presented basically as a melody. There isn't a lot of harmony underneath it, and that would be typical of many Asian melodies. So I'm going to play the melody through once on the piano, and then we'll sing it, and I'll play it at about the speed that I think it would be presented or normally be sung at, and then we'll sing the first stanza. Oh, just a little note here that I can't do on the piano, but when we get to the second line, you'll see that little grace note at the end of the first measure. And the way that should be sung is a slide, sliding between the two notes. So when we come to that, every part is shaped. want to do there. That's what that little grace note means. Okay, here's the melody.
Sound like that.
Folks have the words that we need.
you don't have enough time to get to the words, you might be able to hear them, but you don't really know what they are, but you have the words from the other side.
It's the beautiful sun, for me, it's more transportation.
You have to concentrate so much.
It's called a bamboo.
Yeah.
I think that you're getting the feel of what the words are.
Well, you could just have the congregation sing the last line. Ask Jay signs that you make all things new, and let somebody else sing.
We sing a lot of songs.
Kind of responsibly.
Yeah.
It seems, but they'd have to pay attention during this. I think it's something you'd want to have some practice doing before you try to.
And I think you'd want to, I think you'd want to do it in the context of some relationship.
Practice, you're supposed to play the melody and sing one verse before.
Okay, can I stop you here? Large Suburban, what did you think?
We're all over the map with the maybe, and we like the, I'd say we like the theology, we like the images, we like that.
Uh-huh. The ranges.
I personally don't like the range.
So we thought the choir would be the likely medium in order to introduce to the congregation.
Especially the congregation had the words where they could see what the choir was singing.
Yeah, I think, you know, this is one of the barriers of Asian tunes, is they often have a range of over an octave. Mm-hmm. And this one has the range of an octave plus a fourth.
Yeah.
And that is a little bit outside of Western expectations for a melody range.
Mm-hmm.
And that is a barrier and one of the reasons this music isn't doing real well among us. And so I think some of these kinds of solutions, if you want the music, really have to be thought out, because to reach up to that high note in the middle is really difficult.
And she came up with a good idea, and so I don't know your name. She thought that the last line could be sung by the congregation, and that then as kind of a response.
Oh, that was your idea.
Yeah, and then they wouldn't have to sing the high note.
Yeah, and you could get the choir to do the the congregation.
Yeah, I like that.
And it lended itself to other musical instruments too, like the
rain
stick or the old chimes, finger chimes.
Something that's more.
Right.
Which probably, since we're a large suburban parish, we probably have it.
You can probably afford it.
Unlike these people who might not have.
Yeah, do budget cuts.
4%. They can borrow it from us on the off weeks, right?
What would be, okay, let's hear from the urban parish first. What do you think?
I guess we thought no.
Okay, why?
For many reasons. Some of them are expressed, sort of the ranginess of it, and the words we sort of didn't. The third verse wasn't as too clear to us of what it really meant.
Mm-hmm.
And even though the imagery is beautiful, we don't really understand the theology just from singing it once through. So I'm sure the congregation singing it once through also worrying about the notes wouldn't maybe derive as much meaning. So what we said that it's a lovely song and it's a beautiful tune, but it would take a lot. We would have to implement a lot of a big educational process to sort of understand Asian music, and then to sort of understand the words,
mm-hmm.
and then to try to teach it to the congregation or get some group to do it, and that all this effort is not necessary because this is not. This doesn't have, it's not this diamond of hymnody that we need.
Okay, that's a very good, well thought out argument, and I think your assessment is true. This kind of music takes a lot of front end loading in education and training to understand why it would be worth it. One of the things though I think that you were looking at least this group I overheard you a little bit, is that the images here of God are kind of unusual, and that's one of the reasons I think it might be worth it, is that we see God active in creation with human-type hands. And the image, I think, perhaps that you all were stumbling over in the third stanza, like a mat you roll out the land, important to know is that in many Asian countries, people sleep on mats. That is their sleeping bed. And each night, they roll out the mat. They roll it up in the morning, so it doesn't take up space during the day, and then they roll it out at night. So the idea of rolling out a mat is a daily activity for many people. And then the idea of thinking of God as rolling out land in a way that is very similar to one of their daily activities. I think then when you start making those connections, then, you know, these are really beautiful images that we don't have. We would never come up with that kind of an image since that isn't our daily life.
But how would you share that with the congregation? Would you get up at the church musician, you know, give a little 5-minute blurb about
stop worship for 5 minutes, right? That's not right. So then, that's why then you have to really think carefully. How would you introduce this hymn in a way that it could be received? Because certainly you don't want to just stop worship to give a small lecture on age and life. As fun as that might be.
Okay, we're going to close with one final one, which I think should be easy. 263. But I wanted to get to Hispanic culture before we leave all of this. 263. And for, I think this would be true for the Presbyterians, and is, I think, becoming true for the Lutherans, I think is also true for the Catholics. There's more cultural music from Hispanic countries in our hymnals than any other place. And so that alone is a reason to consider why we might want to learn how to do Hispanic music. Okay, this is a very simple piece. I'll just play it through for you once, and then we'll just talk about it for 1 minute. So just quick reaction from anybody? Yes. We have to again be taught. We have to be taught. It's pretty tough to sight read and get all those words in there. Real
quick. It was it? Yes, it actually
is. I had a hard time stumbling over the words, trying to pick it up.
I like it.
But it could fit into the liturgy very easily. Mm-hmm.
And I think the way it's written with the repeats, if you had one person sing the first time through and then the congregation repeat
like
it, then
yeah.
So it sort of suits well for a teaching kind of song.
Right, it's already set up that way, exactly right, that the cantor could sing it the first time, and then the congregation respond, then the cantor sing it the bottom line the first time, and the people respond. Exactly, set up that way to do that. And because we're trying to cram it in 1 minute, we're not learning it well. But in fact, look at how many words there are. There really aren't that many. Mm-hmm. So if we spoke it a couple of times and then sang it a couple of times, I bet we could have fallen into it.
Mm-hmm. Our congregation would go for it.
They would?
Yeah, they would. And I think they'd enjoy having something different at Christmas time. Uh-huh. And something new.
Right.
You know, we do a lot of familiar stuff, but it's fun to do.
Right, and to do something kind of up in Hispanic at that time. Mm-hmm. Right, she's referring to the idea that this comes from Luke 2, and so it's part of the Christmas story. Mm-hmm. Also, as you were saying, it fits into the liturgy, so it could be appropriate any Sunday just as the hymn of praise when we sing the Gloria.
I was going to say that when our congregation in New York was learning LBW years ago, we would have a 5-minute rehearsal of something at the beginning of the service. It was very common to do that. And I don't think that's out of context. That doesn't necessarily disrupt the worship, mm-hmm. as long as you can still maintain the pace of everything else to say, we're just going to take 3 or 4 minutes here and go over this. Yeah. Well, you do it for temple talks all the time. So you say, we're going to take 3 or 4 minutes and go over something we'll sing that's new to you. Mm-hmm. So it'll be more comfortable when you do sing it, and people appreciate that.
Absolutely. Just takes a little from them.
Yep. We very rarely use other languages. I mean, we almost always do everything in English.
Uh-huh.
I think we push them as it is. And we have, well, there's one, a Santo, 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 that's real slow.
Yes.
That we've started doing. We'll sing it a couple of times through in English, and then we'll do a couple of times in Spanish, and then come back. I'm not sure we can push our congregation pretty far, but I don't think we could push them to sing in other languages.
Although the advantage, oops, that picture is gone, but the advantage of working toward doing it in the original language is getting closer to that border, you know, is getting closer to that cultural context. It is one way we can participate across that border rather than bringing everything into ours. So I think sometimes it's worth, especially with simple texts like the Santo, or this text really would be easy once we got it. Well, I hope what you'll take from this is the idea, not that these six steps have to be followed, because certainly they don't, but that either consciously, I think better consciously, although sometimes subconsciously, to go through this kind of a process when we're thinking about these new things can give them the possibility of much more life than just kind of randomly throwing things into worship and just seeing if they work, but kind of to be looking at these deliberately. So thank you very much for your participation and jumping into the discussion.
That was fun.
Yeah.
Thanks, Lorraine. See, that's just different than Spanish.
And if you'll place the hymnals back here, that would be great.
So it's just because we don't, I don't know, it's just not a deal.